Welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How are you doing,
Aaron? I'm doing fine this afternoon. Just been enjoying some winter weather.
Me too. I think this is the first time ever that we've had about the same amount of snow on the ground.
I know. It's so weird. So this is kind of a rarity in Tennessee. I mean, we usually get snow like once a year, but we'll get, you know, a dusting or maybe an inch or two. I got 6.5 inches here where I live in Tennessee, and some of the counties that are farther south than I am, some of them got up almost up to 10 inches. So it was quite the winter event, I guess you want to put it. All the snow fell from, I guess it was Sunday night when I got off work, and then it snowed all the way, all night long, and all day Monday till almost sunset, when it finally started falling out.
What was it last night? It started here. We were like a day behind you, so it must have been a storm that was south and came up to the East Coast.
Yeah, probably. It was really weird. Like, we were positioned like just perfectly, where it was just like band on band on band of snow, just kept going right over the top. And I mean, even today, so it's Tuesday today. I went out to the grocery store, and the roads are still not really that great. I mean, they're passable for sure, but they are not like dry by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, you guys aren't really equipped for removing snow, are you?
I mean, we do have snow plows and salt trucks and things like that. And I saw where on my way home from the grocery store, they actually had one of those huge like industrial graders, like the six-wheeled ones with like the plow like up underneath it that they use to like flatten like land out. They had that out there scraping snow off the road.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is all we got. Let's just go ahead and shove it out there on the street. We'll just pile it off. The weird thing was, like, he was like pushing all the snow like towards the intersection. So I was like, what are you just gonna leave it like sitting in the middle of the intersection? Like, what? I was like, I don't know. I'm going home.
Yeah, last week when I went on my trip to Hawk Mountain and I went through Palmerton, we had that snowstorm and they pushed all of the snow in the middle of the road. Like, because there's street parking on either side of the main street throughout Palmerton, and they pushed the snow in the middle. So there's like this 5 foot, 6 foot high wall of snow, and then they left these little openings for cars to kind of do like a U-turn or turn to get into businesses. And it's like, we almost hit a car because they just kind of pulled out through and you couldn't even see them because of the snow pile. And I'm like, what is
that
this?
That is so weird. Like, yeah. You know, we didn't have that much. So it's not really like piled up like super high. Like, I think the biggest pile I saw was maybe, I don't know, 2 feet tall. And it was kind of like in the corner of a parking lot where they'd kind of pushed all this, you know, kind of like that. But, and I didn't try any of the back roads. Like, I took all the main roads because there's a back way to go to the grocery store. And I'm like, I'm not even going to test my luck going that way. Just take the main roads. And the main roads, like, 5 lanes wide. And they really only had, like, 1 lane on each side. So if you wanted to turn, you had to, like, get in the middle on, like, this 6 inches of snow that was still sitting in the middle of the street, which is fine. I mean, it was no big deal, but yeah, not really our forte on taking care of snowy stuff. And it's been bitterly cold here. Like, the high today is 18, I think it was, and it's supposed to be 0 tonight. And then last night it was -2, I think, was the low. Like, it's been really, really cold.
It's crazy that you're colder than we are. I mean, it's 25 right now, and I think the high tonight, once the sun fully goes down, is going to be 11.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty chilly out. But, you know,
it is.
When you look on the map, it looks like there's just like this all the way from like North and South Dakota through Iowa, Missouri, Kentucky, like this huge bulge of like cold air. And we're just like at the very like tip of the coldness. So we get all the, you know, super cold air, but
it's funny that you say that because I had pulled up my weather app when you started talking, and I'm looking at exactly what you're talking about. How it says the Arctic blast pushes through deep south, recording fall. Oh my Jesus God. Arctic blast pushes into deep south records. Anyways. I just can't talk today.
I did see a stat. In the last 400 days, the high temperature has always been above 32 degrees, except for yesterday. It was kind of fun. There's a big pond back behind my apartment complex. And when I got home Sunday, I took my dog out and it wasn't frozen at all. And then I went and watched the Lions beat the Rams. Go Lions. And then by the time I got back, which was like 3 hours later, half the pond had already frozen over. And then the time I got up the next morning, it was completely frozen over. That's how cold it was getting. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty quick. Well,
to be fair, it's not a super deep pond. Like, it's probably only a couple feet deep. So I think those kind of freeze a little faster than, say, like, you know, a lake or, you know, even a big pond, like a deep pond. But I think we got a real interesting topic for this week. So at the end of this month, at the end of January, me and some friends are going down to New Orleans for the weekend. And I've never been. And so me and Laura were sitting here talking about, like, you know, what are we going to talk about next week? And I was like, we should do something on New Orleans. And that way, you know, it kind of ties into me going down there. And I don't really know a whole lot about New Orleans. So maybe, hopefully, we found something between the two of us that I can check out while I'm down there.
Yeah, there is a lot of haunted things down there. So there's no shortage of things to talk about.
Yeah, New Orleans is one of those, you know, older cities. I mean, I know it was founded in the early 1800s, I would assume. Maybe even earlier than that.
I feel like it'd be earlier, but I don't know.
I don't know either.
1718.
1718?
Yep, that's what it says.
I would have never guessed that. Huh.
That's what most of the links here are saying. I just put it in a Google search real quick, and most of them are saying that. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
I mean, yeah, I guess not. I mean, but nonetheless, New Orleans, like I said, I'm only going to be there a weekend, but the people I'm going down there with, they've been there twice before. So they've kind of set the itinerary about, you know, what we're going to go do and what we're going to see and stuff like that. And hopefully I can squeeze in a couple of extra, you know, just drive by and see some of these places that we're about to talk about. Just so I can say, hey, I know where that is. I've seen that place. So I think we'll just jump right in here. My first story is called Ghosts of the Parade. So they have a big parade fairly often. I don't even know how often they do it.
When is Mardi Gras?
I believe it's in March. I think it's in March or April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's in the springtime. I'm just not exactly sure the week that it is this year, but I'm pretty sure it's in March.
Okay. I was going to say, how crazy would that be if you just ended up going and it happened to... Yeah, right?
Be like, why are all these people here? What's going on? So this one, and this is not like a continuous story. It's just some of the ghosts that are reportedly located along the parade route. So we'll get right in here. So in the heart of New Orleans, the Uptown Parade Route passes by the historic Collins Hotel on St. Charles Avenue. The mansion, built in 1883 by tobacco magnate Simon Hersham, is known for its ghostly inhabitants. The most famous is the quote-unquote woman in white, believed to be Ida, Simon's wife, who died unexpectedly in 1895. Various rooms in the hotel are said to host unique ghosts, from weary women in room 10 to the apparition of Simon Hersham himself in room 20. The paranormal activity includes rocking daybeds, disappearing and reappearing objects, and ghostly pranks. Moving to 4th Street, parade goers encounter ghosts known for messing with utilities near the former 1891 Castle Inn. The Translucent Man, a servant who died in a fire, plays tricks on guests by moving items and manipulating electronic devices. Another ghost, Emily, is said to turn water faucets on and off and bounce on guests' beds. The Pontchartrain Hotel, dating back to 1927, has had its share of hauntings. Sisters who perished in a fire on the 11th floor continue to gossip and bicker, while a husband and wife haunt the 9th floor's ice machine. The Devil's Mansion, once located at 1319 St. Charles Avenue, had the dark legend involving Madeline Freneau murdering her lover. Moving on, we have Galier Hall, a neoclassical building in New Orleans, holds paranormal tales tied to Mardi Gras. A poltergeist believed to be the spirit of a man murdered on the steps during a 1972 Mardi Gras parade haunts the rarely used third floor, causing disruptions. Another ghost is said to be that of the Union General Benjamin Beast Butler, known for his harsh treatment of New Orleans. Moving to Common Street on St. Charles Avenue, a gruesome history unfolds inside a building where a chef named Gaston, turned murderer, operated. Gaston, as known as Fraud and Valen, killed and served slaves as food, using their skin for shoes. The ghost of his victims seeking revenge lingered on the third floor, while the talking yellow slippers, a chilling artifact of his crimes, where it was never found. Not limited to buildings, the paranormal extends to parades, notably the crew of Mid-City's Procession. One of the psychics that are fairly famous, I've never heard of him, but it was Mickey of Miami, has dubbed it the number one most haunted parade in America. She attributes this to the crew's handmade foil decorations attracting spiritual entities visible in parade photos. The crew of Mid-City's annual procession on the Uptown Parade Route is deemed a supernatural spectacle, with the dead purportedly finding joy in the festivities. So, plenty of things to see there. It would still be fun to just kind of walk the parade route, you know, just to see all the different older buildings and the haunted places, because it sounds like it's just a hotbed of ghosts.
Yeah, the whole area is. I don't know if you've heard of this, but this is a super popular one, which is why I chose not to do it. Because, I mean, if you look anything up, this is the LaLaurie Mansion. Have you heard of her?
I have not.
She is some real messed up lady. She had a ton of slaves, and she would keep them upstairs in her attic. And, I mean, I guess there's some kind of dispute about how bad the conditions actually were, but she did not treat them well. I guess it was rumored that she would do kind of experiments on them, she'd cut them apart and sew them back together in other places. I will never forget this because it horrified the hell out of me. The very first time that I sat down to try to watch American Horror Story, I think it was the third season, and it was called the witch season or something like that, and it was featured down in New Orleans, and the scene opens up with that actress. She was the unsinkable Molly Brown on the Titanic. Well, anyways, if you saw her face, she's very recognizable, but she played the LaLaurie woman, and the beginning just shows these slaves being tortured in the attic, and it's horrendous. I watched about 15 seconds of it, and I was like, what the hell did I just watch? And I wanted nothing to do with American Horror Story after that.
Just all right, we're going to go watch Lifetime now, and yeah.
No, I'll never watch Lifetime.
Well, they got Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay, Unsolved Mysteries. Oh, was it? I guess it was on there, wasn't it?
Probably. Yeah. I think it was. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think the original one was on Fox, but I think Lifetime has it now.
Yeah. Because I was trying to think of that. I keep thinking I should rewatch those. But anyways, if you do a ghost tour, that's one of the main spots that they stop. And you can't go in there because it's privately owned. But you can see the outside of it. And at one point, Nicolas Cage did own it. And he was starting to get a little crazy.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The mansion was affecting him. And I think that's why he sold it. I mean, don't quote me on that, but yeah.
Right.
So it's a pretty dark place. Yeah, she got in a lot of trouble because, back then, obviously, it was legal to own slaves, but they were even why are you losing so many slaves? Where are they all going? Why do you keep buying more?
Right. Huh. I'll have to look into that one.
Yeah, you'll have to go check that out.
For sure. All right, let's see what you got for me. What's the first place I should go to?
Oh, I don't know about if this is the first place you should go to, but I have a story that I found on Reddit, and it is... Okay, so now I'm old when it comes to technology, so I don't really know how Reddit works exactly. I just kind of stumbled my way around it. But I guess it would be considered the Reddit forum or thread. I don't know.
They call it like subreddits or like the individual ones. You know, like r no sleep is a subreddit or r/whatever. Those are subreddits. And then there's topics within that subreddit.
Okay. So this one is r ghost stories. So I guess that would be the subtopic. That's the
subreddit.
Subreddit. Yeah. But whatever, that's the subreddit. I don't know what the topic is in this, but anyways, so there's the story that was written by this person, and the story goes, my story takes place in 2018. Picture it, New Orleans during Halloween season. My parents and I were there to celebrate a birthday, my father's, and attend a healthcare conference. We decided to stay at the hotel, Mont-Leon, located in the French Quarter, because that is where my conference was taking place. Little did I know, it's also known for being haunted. Like, let me stop you there. Why would you think that somewhere in New Orleans is not haunted? But anyways.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, back to reading. It says, as a psychic medium, I was fully prepared to have many paranormal experiences, but I was not prepared for what happened to both of my parents soon after we arrived. On the first night of our arrival, my parents had to stay in my room because their room was double booked. That night, I woke up around 2 a.m. to find my father sitting up in his bed across from mine. There was a thin, androgynous, 8-foot-tall being touching his leg. I watched for a few minutes. My dad laid back down and the benevolent being disappeared. The next day, I asked my dad about it, and he said he was visited by an alien being who told him he was healing his sciatica pain. Indeed, his pain disappeared for months and months. 4 days later, my parents are now staying in their room. On the last morning of our stay, my father rings me to please come into their room. I get there and see that they are both anxious and bewildered. My father then proceeds to tell me that he knows my mother was possessed by a spirit the night before, who kept insisting that she jump from the window in her room. My dad stated that around 3 a.m. the night before, my mother woke him up to tell him to hold her hands and not let her go. My father thought my mother was having a stroke because her face looked, quote, faded somehow. She was there, but not, end quote, he said. His intuition told him to keep guard. My mother recounted that she felt when a young woman entered her body but pushed past her to ask my father to hold her hands until the morning came. She said the woman kept asking her to go to the window and jump. My mother said that all she could do was pray for protection. She said she focused on my dad and asked the spirit to leave her. We left New Orleans a little shaken, but okay. When I got back home, I reached out to the hotel and spoke to a manager about the incident. He informed me that he had worked there 5 years and I was the third person he spoke to who had this experience. He validated that there was a story that a young woman had jumped to her death from that room after being jilted by a lover. I sure do wish they had disclosed the information prior to me booking that room. Now I know better to ask before I book. So, I went on a hunt to try to find that story of the hotel. I didn't spend a ton of time researching on it, but I did look a little bit and I couldn't find any story of a woman jumping to her death from this hotel window, but not saying that the story is not out there. Maybe I didn't come across it. I don't know. But what I did come across was a little bit of the backstory, and the hotel was established by Antonio Mont-Leon from Sicily, and he had owned a shoe factory over in Sicily. And then he came to America in 1880, and by 1886, he had built the hotel, and then as the years went on, he added to it, and then he died, it got passed to his son, and then I guess his son passed away, and then eventually went to his grandson, and by the 1950s, the hotel became run down, so they rebuilt it and they made it even bigger, more elaborate. They added ballrooms, a sky terrace, swimming pools. And the ghost that I did come across was mainly was this one that he used to be an employee of the hotel. And it says that he's still there, just kind of trying to help out around the hotel, and that he didn't want to leave. He loved his job so much. And it's stated that according to the employees of the hotel, however, it is haunted, but none of the ghosts who inhabit the property are aggressive or angry. And there's also a story from the late 1800s. There was a little boy named Maurice Beguerre. Maurice's parents were very frequent to stay at the hotel, and they would often go to the French Opera House on Bourbon Street. But the opera was certainly no place for a three-year-old Maurice, so he was routinely left in the hotel with his nanny as his parents went to enjoy the nightlife of the French Quarter. One night when his parents were out, Maurice fell gravely ill. His temperature spiked, his little body convulsing with sickness. Though his nanny tried to tend to him as much as she could, the fever was much too high, and Maurice passed away that night. When the parents returned from the opera, they were horrified to find that their son was dead. His mother was so distraught that she demanded her husband bring her back to the hotel every year so that she could hopefully come in contact with her dead son's spirit. Some years later, apparently she did. The ghost of Maurice appeared to her in the dead of night. Tears stained her cheeks as she allegedly gripped her son's apparition in tight embrace. Leaning back, Maurice's spirit assured her, "Mommy, don't cry, I'm fine." No doubt Maurice is just fine, but his spirit continues to wander the hotel of the 14th floor, where he perished. Numerous guests on that particular floor have reported walking up in the dead of night, only to hear childlike laughter. And then the apparition of a toddler running around as though playing or perhaps seeking his long now dead parents. So a little bit more on the 14th floor. There is an instance where one night a couple entered the elevator of the lobby of the hotel. They pressed the number of their appropriate floor and found themselves in a tight embrace. Preoccupied that they didn't realize the elevator had stopped on the wrong floor, the 14th floor. The door pinged open, the couple stepped out, eager to head back to their hotel suite. But the moment that the elevator door closed behind them, the air around them grew cold, the skin on their arms prickling as an inkling of awareness edged out the passion. Holding hands, they slowly made their way down the hallway. With each foot planted on the ground, the already cool air grew that much colder and a chill shuddered down their spines. They rounded the bend in the corridor and nearly released a scream as the ghostly scene before them. Although the couple hightailed it back to the elevator with record speed, what they saw was imprinted in their memory. Apparitions of children playing in the middle of the hall. Children not wearing present-day clothing, but clothing of a bygone era. The children were laughing, and then, one by one, each child's apparition stopped to stare at the couple, before vanishing right from sight. Who these ghostly children might have been in a previous era is a mystery. So, also, that ties into a little bit of a superstition where there's hotels, and they don't list the 13th floor because of superstition, because of the fear of the number 13. And I actually think there's an origin story of that, if I'm remembering correctly, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
I think you're completely right there, because I was just thinking about that where, you know, if most hotels don't have a 13th floor, it'll go to 12 to 14th, but the 14th would really be the 13th. And I also think you're correct about the origin story, because I'm pretty sure I've heard it somewhere down the way. But I would have to look it up. But yeah, there is an origin story. Like,
we'll have to look into it.
Yeah. Yep. Put it on the list.
Yeah. So I think that this really is possibly the 13th floor, but it's labeled as the 14th floor. And I also found a website where someone was doing like a little travel blog and they showed pictures and they contained one of the pictures of the elevator where it just had, you know, like 12, 14, 15, and so on and so forth. So it skipped the 13th floor.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, I would like to know more if there was actually a woman who had committed suicide, because that's really, I mean, could you imagine going to a hotel and then being drawn to jump out the window? That's crazy.
Just imagine, like, you're trapped in your own body, something else controlling it, making you throw yourself out a window. I mean, that's like the worst torture ever.
Yeah, that's really scary.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's kind of odd that you found that story. But then, like, later on, it was said, like, none of the ghosts were real violent or disruptive.
Right. I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, that doesn't really add up to me.
Yeah. Well, I guess two different takes, maybe, or...
That, or they're trying to control the narrative, maybe, that, you know, don't come stay at this hotel. Don't come stay at our hotel because you'll get thrown out the window in the middle of the night. Like,
yeah, but only on the 14th floor. It's fine. Yeah.
Right.
You'll see on the elevator where they got like the 14th floor button removed and there's just like an X over it. Like, no, the floor is out of order. The water doesn't work, or, you know, something.
Right.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah, I hope you're not staying there.
No, I think I'm staying at the, you know, now that you say that, I should probably look to see.
Yes, let's dig into this.
It's a older hotel. I know it is. It is called QC Hotel and Bar. We haven't talked about it yet, so.
Yeah, but guess what I'm going to be doing as soon as we get done recording?
I'm going to get a text message with 20 links on it. Be like, you might want to.
Are you sure you want to stay here?
Well, to be fair, my friends stayed there last year at this same hotel, and they didn't say anything weird about it. So we're going to hope that I'm not staying on the 14th floor.
I really want you to have some kind of nothing harmful, but like, I want you to have an experience so then you can report back, because that'd be so freaking cool.
I think it would be better to go in blind, so don't look it up.
I agree.
And then if something happens or doesn't happen when I get home, then look it up and see, you know, what actually, if anything, is happening at that hotel.
Yeah, we're gonna do a follow-up New Orleans part two
in about 4 weeks, give or take. All right, so the next story I have is called The Fighting Ghosts. In the 200 block of Cherokee Street in the Black Pearl neighborhood of New Orleans, a mysterious and violent occurrence unfolded one dark night. Bricks, stones, iron, and wooden debris began raining down in a backyard, prompting residents to investigate, suspecting mischievous children or an old grudge. Despite months of nightly projectile assaults witnessed by neighbors and police, the source remained elusive, seemingly materializing out of thin air. Eventually, the mystery was solved. The cause was revealed to be a supernatural battle between two poltergeists. The neighborhood was once home to Abner White in 1890. Described as a cranky old man, Abner harbored a strong dislike for neighborhood children, accusing them of harassment. One day, after an encounter with giggling girls, particularly Ollie Voss, Abner erupted in anger. Though Abner woke up dead soon after, his vengeful spirit continued to torment the neighborhood. In a tragic turn of events, a superheated brick belched from a fireplace ignited Ollie Voss's nightdress, leading to her death. The distressed girl claimed to see Abner's grinning face in the flames. After Abner's death, Ollie, who had been accidentally killed by the brick, was reburied near Abner's tomb in a neighboring cemetery. The nightly battles between the two ghosts resulted in a relentless shower of brick, stones, and sticks in Ollie's family's backyard, causing harm and even leading to another girl's death. Recognizing the source of the disturbance, a wise neighbor pointed out the proximity of the two tombs in the cemetery as the cause of the ongoing mayhem. To end the dangerous conflict, the Voss family purchased another tomb and relocated Ollie away from Abner. Miraculously, the violent phenomenon ceased immediately and the accumulated wreckage vanished, leaving the yard lush with green grass. The relocation put an end to the otherworldly feud between the ghost of Ollie and Abner, bringing peace to the once turbulent neighborhood. Now, I have to say, this is the first time that I've ever read about two ghosts actually feuding, I guess would be a good way of putting it, like, or having a supernatural battle in a backyard. Like, I've never really heard of that before. Have you heard anything like that?
No, I've never heard of that. And in fact, I was going to say, am I hearing that correctly? That they're actually throwing rocks at each other and then injuring people in the process?
Correct. And they killed another girl in the process.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, you're just walking? I just...
No.
No. I can't imagine that at all. Like, this old man hated kids so much that he, just because one of them was buried next to him, the spirits wanted to, he wanted to feud with the spirits. It's a very weird statement. He must have been a very angry man.
Yeah, I mean, and then who was it that he was feuding with? I mean, it sounds
like... It was a lot of children in the neighborhood, but there was one particular one. Her name was Ollie Voss. I guess it just kind of goes to show that, you know, the spirits were once humans too, you know, that they still carry their prejudices and their likes and dislikes and, you know, everything. And it's not just like a random energy thing.
I mean, they say it all the time, like, if you're an asshole in life, you're going to be an asshole in death.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. In this particular story, that guy was definitely the asshole.
I've never heard a story like that.
Mm, yeah, I went through a bunch of stories, like, because, you know, there's a ton of them here. And that's why this one caught my eye, because just how unique it was, or is.
Yeah. Are you guys going to do any cemetery tours while you're down there?
I think we're going to do the haunted ghost trail or something like that.
Okay.
We're going to do something like that, yeah. I think there's like, I don't know if it's like a bus ride or like an open bus ride or something like that, where it kind of takes you to like all the real famous places around there. So I might see some of these places for sure.
I mean, see if you can get into, do one of the cemetery tours, because those are supposed to be really neat.
Yeah, I'll look into it for sure.
Have you ever seen pictures of the cemeteries down there?
I have. I've saw pictures, because they don't actually bury them in the ground. They stand them, mm-hmm. stand them up. Is that right?
Yeah, it's like a whole, I can't think of the word right now.
What is the word? It's like an above ground tomb, basically. A mausoleum.
Yes, that's the word. Yep.
I knew as soon as I heard, yep, that's what it is. Mausoleums.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So yeah. All right. What else you got for me on our trip down New Orleans?
So I have a story called The Axeman, and I've never heard of this one.
Ooh.
It's a pretty strange story, actually. All right. So there's this guy called the Axeman of New Orleans. Was an unidentified American serial killer active in New Orleans and surrounding communities, including Gretna, from May 1918 to October 1919. And I guess this guy supposedly referred to himself as Jack the Ripper of the Bayou, because this took place like 30 years after Jack the Ripper.
Makes sense.
So press reports during the height of the public panic about the killings mentioned the similar murders as early as 1911, but recent researchers have called these reports into question. The Axeman was never identified. The murders remained unsolved. So, the killer's victims were usually attacked with an axe which belonged to the victims themselves. In most cases, a panel on the back door of the home was removed by a chisel, which, along with the panel, was left on the floor near the door. The intruder then attacked one or more of the residents with either an axe or a straight razor. The crimes were not motivated by robbery. The perpetrator never removed items from the victims' homes. The majority of the Axeman's victims were Italian immigrants or Italian Americans, leading many to believe that the crimes were ethically motivated. Many media outlets sensationalized the aspect of the crimes, even suggesting mafia involvement despite lack of evidence. Some crime analysts have suggested that the killings were related to intercourse and that the murder was perhaps a sadist specifically seeking female victims. Criminologists Colin and Damon Wilson hypothesized that the Axeman killed male victims only when they obstructed his attempts to murder women. Supported by cases in which the women of the household was murdered, but not the man. A less plausible theory is that the killer committed the murders in attempt to promote jazz music. Suggested by a letter attributed to the killer in which he stated he would spare the lives of those who played jazz in their homes. All right, so this is where I have, there's the actual letter that this mysterious serial killer wrote. And it reads, I'm not quite sure why he wrote it like this. The top of the letter says, Hell, comma, March 13th, comma, 1919. Esteemed mortal. They have never caught me and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible. Even as the ether that surrounds your earth, I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish police called the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know who they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with blood and brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but His Satanic Majesty Francis Joseph, etc. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover what I am, for it were better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axemen. I don't think there is any need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as a most horrible murderer, which I am. But I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in a close relationship with the Angel of Death. Not to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, I am going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I am going to take a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well, then so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of you people who do not jazz it out on the specific Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. Well, as cold as I am and crave the warmth of my native TARDIS, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that thou wilt publish this, that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed, either in fact or realm of fantasy, the Axeman.
Listening to that manifesto, for lack of a better word, the first thing that strikes me is like all the religious stuff. Like maybe he was like a religious zealot or something like that. Like he was doing God's work, but he blamed it on the devil. And it almost sounded like something that could be written today, right? Like not the words he used, but like the themes that he used.
Mm-hmm.
It just struck me as a very modern sounding letter, even though it was written 100 years ago.
It's like so weird because when I'm reading it, I get these vibes where I'm like, it sounds, these parts where it sounds really old, and then these parts where it sounds more on the modern side.
Mm-hmm.
And then you brought up the religion thing because it made me think of in the Bible where they say to put the lamb's blood over your door for Passover and you will be spared. And it's like, if you turn on jazz music, you'll be spared.
Yeah. Like a weird mixture of like modern and like biblical things. Very, very strange.
It's very weird. And at the end here, it says that the Axeman was not caught or identified and his crime spree stopped mysteriously as it had started. The murderer's identity remains unknown to this day, although various possible indications of varying plausibility have been proposed. on March 13th, 1919, a letter purporting to be from the Axeman was published in the newspaper saying he would kill again at 15 minutes past midnight on the night of March 19th, but would spare occupants of any place where a jazz band was playing. That night, all New Orleans dance halls were filled to capacity, and professional and amateur bands played jazz at parties at hundreds of houses around town. There were no murders that night. And then, like, if you look this up, and I'll put a link in the show notes, it says of all of the victims that were murdered, and then I think a couple of them actually did survive, and then it goes into detail of how each of them were attacked, but I'm not going to go into that. I'm not going to read that. Yeah. But yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, like, it almost sounds like a weird way to promote jazz. You know, like a very, like, shock way.
Exactly.
But, like, he took it too far or something. Like, very weird. It does sound modern. That's the thing that strikes me so more than anything else. It just sounds like something you would read in the newspaper today. Like, some weird guy, you know, murdered people to promote his jazz band. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, just something weird like that.
Then there was also other articles on it saying that most of the people he attacked were Italian immigrants. And I think that this article did mention that too, but it had something to do with most of them were Italian immigrants who own, like, grocery stores. And then there was a theme where it's like there was a competitor who was competing against another grocery store or something. But I didn't go into that because it's just, I didn't have time to go into every single theory.
Yeah, the Italian thing's kind of weird. You know, maybe it's some guy whose neighbor was Italian, and for whatever reason, maybe they disagreed. So I don't know. It seems kind of a far stretch that just because a neighbor made you mad, you're going to go out and start axe murdering people. Maybe he was just unstable anyways, and he was just really good at hiding it. Because you think, you know, somebody that was that unstable to murder people with an axe, you know, people would be like, oh, you're talking about Creepy Jim down the road. Yeah, don't go to Jim's house, you know. Like, everybody would know, because even though New Orleans a large city, you know, it was nowhere near like cities today, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the scarier part about it too, that somebody that mentally unwell can just be walking around and you'd never know it.
Yeah, it is. It makes you wonder, like, what happened to him? Did he, you know, just naturally die, or did he move away, or, you know, a million different things, you know?
Or even I wonder if people found out who he was and they went and took care of him themselves. Who
right. knows? You know, a little mob justice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, creepy old Jim. Well, sorry, Jim.
He had to go.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, justice back those days was a little different than justice is today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good story. I like that one because I've never heard that one before. I mean, it's a good story. Like, it's bad what happened, but it's a good story.
Right. I wonder if there's hauntings that are related to those murders.
I mean, it's possible, but, you know, with that being so long ago, it would make me wonder if any of those houses were still standing or if they'd been demolished and rebuilt, you know, somewhere else.
Well, it's only from the early 1900s.
That's still over 100 years ago.
Yeah, but, like, in old horse historic towns and stuff like that, like, that's not... I don't see that out of the realm of possibility to be that they'd still be up.
No, it's not. It's definitely not outside the realm of impossibility. I was just thinking that from the story, I kind of got like it was on the kind of like the outskirts of the city, like not so much like the center parts of the city. That could just be me, you know, making it my own story. But it felt like it was where the murders were was a more rural part on the outskirts of a city.
You know, I think you're right because it says in New Orleans and it says surrounding communities. So that makes sense.
So that's why I kind of went with the whole, you know, mm-hmm. because if it was on the outskirts, you know, there's probably a supermarket over top of it now or an interstate or, you know, like, you know, so many different things it could be. And it could still be standing. Absolutely. Right. But, you know, the chances are, especially with being on the outskirts of New Orleans, which is a major city today, it's still standing is, I would say, slim. Yeah, good story there. So I got another one here. This one's called The Galley House. So The Galley House also known as Cuffer's Building in the French Quarter of New Orleans, has a haunted history tied to the devastating yellow fever outbreak of 1853. Major Louis B. Galley had the building constructed in the early 19th century following the Good Friday Fire of 1788. At the rear of the Galley House is the abandoned former slave quarters, where paranormal reports describe the forlorn faces of ghostly children reaching out through barred windows. These children are believed to be victims of the 1853 yellow fever outbreak, and those who reach into the window claim to feel the touch of these spectral children. The 1853 yellow fever outbreak in New Orleans was particularly severe, claiming over 7,800 lives by the end. Victims suffered from a horrific and rapid progression of symptoms, including high fever, jaundice, convulsions, and black vomit. The authorities initially downplayed the outbreak for economic reasons, leading to a delayed response. The ghost of Galley House children are not the only spirits tied to Yellow Jack in the French Quarter. And Yellow Jack was just a nickname for the yellow fever. Nearby locations, such as the former quarantine hospital, Ursuline Covenant, and Berber Orleans, are said to be haunted by yellow fever victims and caretakers. The cries of young yellow fever victims echo through the halls of Bourbon Orleans, reminding guests of the tragic outbreak that once struck the Sisters of the Holy Family Orphanage. So this is kind of like a broad one, but there was a lot of people that died during this yellow fever outbreak, which was right before the Civil War. And it sounded like it was quite horrific. I mean, especially if it was a rapid progression. It reminds me of that kid from your earlier story. Remember how he said he got a real high fever and he died during, you know, like it started like one night. This is what it kind of reminds me of, like, because it said there was a rapid progression of symptoms. I wonder.
Maybe that's what he had.
Maybe he did. Oh, isn't that weird? Isn't that a good way to wrap it up?
Yeah. I wonder what the, if the time periods line up.
Yeah, you have to go out there and look, because I don't remember what the time period on that one was, but yeah, I mean, I guess it just goes to show, you know, there's been a lot of bad things that's happened in New Orleans, and maybe that's why it's such a haunted place.
Yeah, that always begs the question, is it like all this stuff happened here and then it just more bad energy is stacking on top of more stuff? Or is it like, was there something like the land was cursed before it was developed, or I don't know what.
Could be. If memory serves me correctly, I believe a lot of Native Americans lived in that particular area. I'm sure they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then us white people came over and kicked them out.
Yep. Brought smallpox.
Yep.
Smallpox and alcohol.
Yeah. All the not good stuff. I don't blame them for being angry, because I'd be angry too.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I was looking for stories, I came across yellow fever ghost tour groups. So there's actually like a tour group, they call themselves Yellow Fever.
I bet it goes right by that quarantine hospital, the Covenant, and the hotel.
Yep.
Might look into that one, see if I can get on that. That'd be kind of cool, since I did the story for it.
You definitely should. I mean, there's endless things that you could get into. And oh, which reminds me, I have a little note to add to our episode before this, because it ties in with the Native Americans cursing the land. If you remember Matthias Schombacher, who was on Hawk Mountain and he committed all those horrible acts of murder, I forgot to add that he, like, on his deathbed said that he was hearing voices telling him to commit these murders of these people. So now, was there something where that the Native Americans cursed that land and they cursed him, you know, like whoever would come to the area and live there that would end up being cursed and then to go kill other people?
Yeah. Maybe he was just a mental case.
I mean, yeah, but it also could tie it. You're not going with my theory here, Aaron. You're like throwing it all apart.
Continue. Please continue. Let's hear the rest of it.
But no, that's just my That's just my thoughts. Well, you could tell
me that. I like it. I like it.
Who the skeptic is and the whatever I call myself.
Yes. Yes. The skeptic in me comes out once in a while.
Yeah. I mean, and that's fair because you can't just give in to all these wild flights of fancy and stuff. But I mean, I feel like there is something to that.
There very well could be. I mean, that place is, there's a lot of history behind that place. Just like New Orleans, for instance. I mean, there's a ton of history back there, you know, and you know, I don't think we'll ever know if it was cursed land or just, you know, 200 years of bad energy just kind of all built up in the place.
I mean, gosh, and I was listening to, a couple weeks ago, I was listening to a podcast covering New Orleans, and they were saying that the people that were actually doing like paranormal investigations, that they were really heavily relying on historians for the history. Because if you were actually to sit down and do the history of this, I mean, these are historians that actually that is their job, and they've been doing this for years and years, and they still don't even have everything straight. So it just goes to show how much there actually really is to dig into and how much stuff is probably missing throughout time.
Yeah, I mean, especially like, you know, if we go back to like the Christmas stuff, you know, the stuff that happened way back in 500 AD and whatnot. Like, you know, we have like one handwritten account that was a retelling mm-hmm. that was actually wrote down. Like, you know, how much of that was lost? I would assume a lot. I would assume, but.
I mean, well, that's even some of the areas, I guess it was like Greek and Romans could actually write. But other areas didn't write. They just relied mm-hmm. on retelling. So.
And we all know how the game of telephone works.
Exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have a ton of places to go see when I go to New Orleans. Yeah. Thanks for sharing today, Laura.
Yeah. I think you need more than a weekend to stay there, but.
I wish I could stay for like a week. It seems like, you know, a week would be like the perfect timeline where you could do like a little something every single day mm-hmm. and get a really good feel for it. But hey, I'll take a weekend.
Yeah. I hope you enjoy your trip. But I mean, we will talk before then. So
yes, for sure.
That's all I have for today.
That's all I got for today as well.
Alrighty, guys. I'm going to put some links in the show notes and put our email in the show notes. Hit us up, send us your stories. And I will talk to you later.
Have a good rest of the evening. And that's a wrap.